people.
It's time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. April 21st, 1975, and this is number 194 in Dialogue Conspiracy. I'm happy to announce that the arrangements will be made soon for people to order cassettes of these shows. I've been on the air almost 4 years, and we've never been able to send cassettes out to people that wrote and ordered for past shows. The cassettes will be approximately, I think, around $5. And when I go on the air, I number the shows, and I will make up a list of table of contents for some of these for people who are interested, and I believe that very shortly we'll be able to get these cassettes out to you if you're interested in them. You can write to me at KLRB. I came in to the station today and was very happy. I received two gifts. One was a book, Farewell America, a book which I have had for a long time, but many people in this country have not been able to obtain. It's by James Hepburn. That's a pseudonym. And the young person who sent it to me is from Windsor, Ontario, in Canada, and gave me his address. These books are not sold in America anymore. You have to order them through special individuals, not bookstores. And this book is dedicated for young people in America, that they better wake up to the fascism and the forces that killed John Kennedy, because the future depends upon them. If you're interested in copies of Farewell America, send me your name and self-addressed envelope, and I'll give you the address in Canada that you can order that. I also received another gift when I came in today. There's a party that listens to Dialogue Conspiracy, does not leave a name or return address on the envelope, and sent me the long-awaited book by Philip Agee, the CIA gentleman. It was written in England, called Inside the Company CIA Diary. Most of the researchers I know have not yet been able to obtain a copy of this book, and this one was sent to me. I was very anxious to read it. I wrote to England, to Penguin Books, and didn't hear from them. So I thank that person, whoever it was, who sent it to me. And there's an address for you to order your own copy. The address in the United States that are being sold is the Classic Bookshops, 572 Fifth Avenue, New York City. And you can order that book, Inside the Company. It is now available, and it is $2.95. Classic Bookshop, 572 Fifth Avenue, New York City, the book about the CIA by Philip Agee. I read in the news service and heard that Gerald Ford is planning to sell his TV rights to CBS. The show will be about the book that Gerald Ford wrote called The Portrait of the Assassin, and it will show that Lee Harvey Oswald was, in quote, psychologically deranged. That was the company line that Gerald Ford used when he wrote this book. President Ford was a member of the Warren Commission, and members of the Warren Commission were not supposed to write books on the Kennedy assassination. They were not supposed to commercialize or propagandize from this tragedy. Gerald Ford will be using information on CBS that is taken from domestic CIA agents. They created a fictitious Lee Harvey Oswald as against the genuine Lee Harvey Oswald, and every measure should be given to boycott CBS and maybe boycott the people who advertise on national television this particular station if they insist on producing this show. I researched for 8 years every adjective used about Lee Harvey Oswald and separated them into the good Oswald and the bad Oswald, such as his writing skills that were high, his learning ability in radio work, his ability at holding a job, radar techniques that he learned in the Marines, and language skills, photographic skills, and his technical skills in the sciences, as well as his ability in high language skills. And then I compared it to what particular witnesses that in the Warren report, it was summarized the Warren report, and found that those stories that Oswald was a loner or wanted a place in history were fictitious. They were made up by espionage agents that had no basis in fact or in evidence. And I'm going next week at length to read you a section that I did in The Realist in 1972. The article was called Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? But it goes at length into the creation of the fictitious Oswald. And many of you who have read that article and ordered it referred to the parts about Watergate and the CIA operation that I pinpointed in that article, 1972. But I think it's important to read with you exactly what I said about Lee Oswald and Marina Oswald and share that information on the air. It's a tragedy that the President of the United States has to put himself before national television 11 years after the murder of President John Kennedy and deliver outright lies to the people. As far as I'm concerned, he should be removed from office for allowing this to happen, and there'll be a lot of unhappiness in years to come by allowing these lies to perpetuate themselves and allowing fascism to become even stronger than it is today. Next, in May, next month, at UCLA, there will be a conference, May 16th, 17th, and 18th. It's called Conspiracy in America, From Dallas to Watergate, Official Violence and Cover-Up. There will be films, panels, workshops on assassinations and intelligence and community and labor repressions. It's sponsored by a Campaign for Democratic Freedoms. This is a three-day conference. The cost is $6 for the general public and $4.50 for students or people who are unemployed. And this includes 3 days of meetings. And if you're interested in ordering tickets or reservations, it will be held at UCLA, but there will be a limit to the amount of people in each room or conference room. You can send your money, P.O. Box 9662, Marina Del Rey, California, 90291. Or again, if you miss this address, we move along pretty rapidly. Send me a self-addressed envelope. Be sure it's self-addressed and stamped, and I'll enclose the information about the conference. It's P.O. Box 9662, Marina Del Rey, California, 90291. There are quite a few people going to Los Angeles to attend this conference. The speakers there will be, in alphabetical order, Mae Brussel, Judith Carnoy, Jeff Cohn, David Dubois, Jane Fonda, Donald Fried, Bannon Garrett, Charles Gary, David Harris, Tom Hayden, Lake Healy, Dorothy Healy, Art Kunkin, Mark Lane, Gary Lawton, George O'Toole, Rusty Rhodes, Mort Saul, Irving Sarnoff, Peter Dale Scott, Morris Starsky, Louis Tackwood, William Turner, and Leonard Wineglass. There will be an evening meeting on the John Kennedy assassination, and the next Saturday evening will be a discussion of the war conspiracy following the murder of John Kennedy. That's where Tom Hayden and Jane Fonda will be speaking and Leonard Wineglass. And then there will be sessions on domestic conspiracy. William Turner, Louis Tackwood, Peter Dale Scott will be talking about the John Kennedy assassination. But it will be an interesting conference filled with information, and mark it on your calendars. And I'll repeat the information next week. I got a letter from the Central Intelligence Agency today saying, Dear Ms. Brussel, let me assure you we're working on your request for records that this agency may have on file. They asked me to understand that they have hundreds of such requests and that they are temporarily busy. There is a delay, but within 30 days, as provided by the regulation, I will receive information as to whether or not the Central Intelligence Agency has a file about Mae Brussel. The bulk of the program today, in fact, most of the entire program now, is going to be reading to you information from the Central Intelligence Agency based upon a request by Senator Howard Baker, who is chairman, vice chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Presidential Campaign Activities. And Senator Baker wrote to Mr. Colby of the CIA and asked for information about the CIA that seemed to be seeping out at the time of the Watergate trials, but got a little too heavy for the Watergate Committee to investigate, so they closed shop. And I'm going to read you some of the information and imagine, this is just a fraction of it, that Mr. Colby provided for Howard Baker. This is information on the CIA and the Mullen Associates and agents that was not presented at the Senate Select Committee, but should have been presented before the committee. They shouldn't have closed shop, and it should have been bound in books like the other green books for everyone in America to hear. But being as they're not available for the public at large, I feel it is my obligation and my interest to share with you some of the things that were happening with the CIA and Mullen Associates and the secret funding of Howard Hughes that has been revealed in the Colby information now. Mr. Colby is head of the Central Intelligence Agency, but which didn't come out at the Watergate hearings. Before I read it, I want to remind listeners that the article I did in Realist, again, I keep referring to my early articles, talked about Robert Bennett, the son of Senator Bennett. This article I'm quoting from was completed July the 11th, 1972, 3 weeks after the arrest at the Watergate Hotel. I wrote about Robert Bennett working directly across the White House. He shared desk with Howard Hunt and with Douglas Caddy of the CIA, and Bennett's organization, the American Dream, refused to disclose the source of $10 million for Nixon's reelection. They admitted they had 75 to 90 committees to collect funds for Nixon's reelection, and they were phony groups. I wrote this in July that they refused, and then 2 years later it turns out that they're nothing but Howard Hughes money going in to fund the dirty tricks and the campaigns of very, I don't know what you call them, they weren't above board Republicans. The regular Republican Party under Mr. Dole did funding in a different way for congressmen and persons running, I guess, governors under the Republican Party. But this was strictly espionage money, CIA money, funneled through Bennett Organization, at least $10 million. I wrote in the article, it was secretly funded with $10 million, and no list of sources was offered. The same funding that kept Richard Nixon in political position through his entire career. The funds would have been cut off in 1968 if he did not take Spiro Agnew as vice president. You see, this group that wanted Agnew as vice president for Richard Nixon was much farther right than Richard Nixon and the bulk of the Republican Party. And the conditions were that they take Mr. Agnew, who they were grooming, to become president. In describing Mullen Associates, I asked questions, because this was only 3 weeks after the arrest, that I wasn't sure where the answers would fall, but these reports now have confirmed a lot of the questions that I want answered earlier. I did say there that 1972 was the most important year in American history, and the CIA that helped fund the canceling of elections in Greece and offered Nixon the money he needed for his 68 election if he took Agnew could also be funding martial law in a police state in this country. The article went on to say money to manage an election campaign is difficult to separate when you mix CIA funds with Republican money, and Robert Mullen, chairman of Mullen & Company, shared his office space at various times with Howard Hunt, Robert Bennett, Douglas Caddy, all possibly CIA agents. Actually, Mr. Mullen was an admiral in the Navy, and I have written throughout this article the links of Navy intelligence and the American and German Nazis, and next week I'm going more. I don't want to digress now, but I want to go into those links. I said then that Robert Bennett, through his office, raised these millions of dollars, and they played a large part in the campaigns of 68 and mingled with CIA money in 1972. And I asked if this money supported the Young Americans for Freedom, such as the secret funding did in 1962 prior to the murder of John Kennedy, because certain persons linked to Nazi, German Nazi and American military experts wanted control of the White House by 1970, and they infiltrated through Texas through Young Americans for Freedom. And I asked how much CIA money is separated from, in quotes, Republican money, and how much is used possibly even to kill a president of the United States when men like G. Gordon Liddy and E. Howard Hunt had weapons in their desk and in their attaché cases. And Lewis Tackwood, who worked with Los Angeles Police Department Squad 19, said there were plans that included killing Richard Nixon. And I asked a lot of questions about the Young Republicans, Douglas Caddy, who worked in this particular office of Mullen Associates, and went into a great length on Robert Bennett, the Mullen Public Relations Office. That's page 35 and page 34 of The Realist. I talked about the Mullen Associates being a nest of CIA agents and asked again over about the false dummy fronts, who was putting the money in, where was it going, and was it used for the black espionage dirty tricks department? Was this a separate dummy front that was set up for the violence? At convention time, as Lewis Tackwood said, the police departments and the CIA and FBI had set aside a fund of $10 million for agent provocateurs and killing and violence, and that was about money that was raised over at Robert Bennett's, and the source of the money was never revealed publicly. The American Dream, this was one of their dummy fronts, collected most of their cash or all their cash before the legal date that was stipulated to declare who the donor was, and this was in April 1972, and James McCord's salary could come from this Nixon fund and from the CIA both. And my article goes quite, it's repetitious to a point. It keeps asking about the use of CIA money mixed with secret dummy front money, and who funds the election of Richard Nixon, and also who provides the money for the violence at the conventions, or the kind of accident of Chappaquiddick that Ted Kennedy had, or the shooting of George Wallace, and who provides the money for these operations that can't be written off as CIA operations. Well, I'm going to read you some of these memos now. This is a letter to Senator Baker from William Colby of the CIA in response to a request. He's a dear Senator Baker, dated June 28, 1974. My staff has advised me of rather extensive discussions they have had with your staff regarding the CIA investigation. We have received a revision of the staff report with a request that it be sanitized by bracketing material to be deleted on security grounds. It is my further understanding that the transcripts and 10 volumes of agency material will not be released, but will be removed from committee records and placed under seal in an appropriate repository and will not be released without CIA approval. It has been my hope that sufficient concrete evidence would have been produced to assure you that the CIA had no prior knowledge of the Watergate or Ellsberg break-in or cover-ups. However, when I reviewed the summary staff report submitted to me on April the 1st, I realized that you had not been so assured. If the revised report is released with its present thrust, it implies that there is a reason to believe that the agency and its officers and employees had prior knowledge of and were wittingly involved in the break-in and the cover-up. If this appears, we have come, I recognize, pardon me, he says, that you have every right to subscribe to your conclusions in the staff report, which are at variance with those I have drawn by the evidence presented during the investigation, which I developed as a result of my own intensive internal investigation. Mr. Colby is saying it was my hope that I could say to you there was no proof that CIA was involved in Watergate or the Ellsberg break-in or cover-up. But when you read this report, you may have a different opinion of it. I myself, Mr. Colby, don't share that. So like Richard Nixon said, there's different interpretations of the White House tapes. Each can have his own opinion. But then Mr. Colby says, it thus appears that we have come to differing views on this subject. If the report is made available to the public in the form proposed, I am concerned that the CIA agency can be the subject of what I deem to be unjustifiable conclusions that agency officers or employers were knowingly involved in a break-in in Watergate or Dr. Fielding's office or the subsequent cover-up. In such case, I may feel it necessary to take an appropriate public position to assure you that the conclusions from my investigations and the results of other investigations are also known. Now, here's the pitch, and let me read it again, and I'll tell you my interpretation. It says, "When Mr. Baker, when you get the CIA report, if it is made available to the public in the form proposed, he's concerned that the CIA will be subject to further investigation that they were involved in the Watergate or the Dr. Fielding or the subsequent cover-up. But he may find it necessary, Mr. Kolber said, I may feel it necessary to take an appropriate public position to assure you the conclusions from my investigation and the results of other investigations are also known, which I take as a direct threat. What he's saying is if you make it appear that the CIA knew of Watergate or Dr. Fielding's office or cover-up, I may go public and make the position that the results of other CIA investigations are also known. And this is, I take as a blackmail, the way I read it, because you know that Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford and Senator Baker, I'm sure many of them know that lurking behind all of this are the assassinations in America, not of foreigners, but the American assassinations. You remember Mr. Angleton left the CIA in a hurry after the exposures in the New York Times about illegal domestic activities in the United States, but Mr. Angleton left in a hurry. He was honored just a couple of weeks ago for his high service at the CIA, but as he split, this is his quotation. A mansion has many rooms, and there were many things going on during that period of anti-war bombings. I'm not privy to who struck John. Now, I think that quotation surfaced in December 74, but we have a copy of a letter here in June 74 saying that if you make some of this information available, I may have to tell you other things the CIA did. Here's parts of the memo that CIA report to Senator Baker. They confirmed that Mullen and Company and its president, Bob Bennett, had an established relationship with the CIA, that Lee R. Pennington, a CIA operative, had entered James McCord's house or office shortly after the Watergate break-in for the purpose of destroying evidence of the CIA connections with James McCord. Said this section of tapes recorded in the CIA derives from information supplied to Senator Baker by Director Colby that there was a central taping capability at the CIA. They thought that the tapes had been destroyed and there was a possibility that some of the tapes that were destroyed were Watergate related. They explained that the initials TSD, Technical Service Division of the CIA, dealt extensively with E. Howard Hunt and the agency and support supplied by the agency to Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy, and that it was used, in quotes, in a wide variety of undertakings. A number of factual discrepancies appear in this section, he says, that can't be reconciled on the basis of the information we have and now possess, such as Hunt's receipt of certain agencies' technical assistance and contemporaneous participation in the preparation of the Ellsberg psychiatric profile. On or after June 17, 1972, they were asked, did any of the individuals associated with the break-ins communicate with any individual associated with the CIA to discuss the Watergate break-in or the Ellsberg psychiatrist office break-in other than James McCord, who was writing to the CIA, which are part of the Watergate hearings? The answer was that on the 10th of July, 1972, which is 3 weeks after the entry into the Watergate Hotel, an officer of a commercial concern communicated to an employee of the CIA information which came to his attention concerning the Watergate 5. No action was taken against this person. The employer's handwritten memorandum for the record on this matter is sensitive material for the agency. An examination of the aforementioned sensitive material revealed more than was therefore known about the scope of the CIA dealing with Robert Bennett and Mullen and Company and led to further intensification and investigation. The Mullen and Company has maintained a relationship with the CIA since its incorporation in 1959. This is very important because in my article how Richard Nixon really came to power and his role as a Navy intelligence agent and with Mr. Mullen, an admiral in the Navy, Nixon was a kept man by Navy intelligence and the Central Intelligence Agency. That's my interpretation. Quoting directly again, E. Howard Hunt left the CIA in 1970 and joined Mullen and Company with its what founder Robert Mullen understood to be Director Helms Blessings. Hunt's covert security clearance was extended by the CIA, and he was using the Mullen cover and he undertook negotiations with the agency with respect to that cover even after he was employed at the White House, according to the agency records. So E. Howard Hunt was using that agency as their cover since 1970, and even while he was working at the White House. Goes on to say, Robert Bennett, who is Senator Bennett's son, joined Mullen and Company and became its president in 1971. I might intersperse here that when Mullen and Company broke up after the elections and Watergate scandal, Mr. Bennett came to California to become chief of public relations for Howard Hughes Empire in Los Angeles on Romaine Street. Back to the report, the Colbert report. Robert Bennett was introduced to the Mullen CIA case officer in April of 71. Bennett brought the Hughes Tool account with him to Mullen. CIA records indicate that the agency consideration was given to utilizing Mullen's Hughes relationship for a matter relating to a cover arrangement in South America and to garner information on Robert Mayhew. Robert Bennett's accessibility to the CIA has raised questions concerning the possible agency involvement or knowledge of Bennett's activities with Hunt and Liddy. To wit, it was Robert Bennett, this is representing Howard Hughes Empire, who suggested and coordinated the DeMott interview regarding Chappaquiddick. Mr. DeMott was a police official up at Chappaquiddick, and here are the Hughes officials and Mr. Bennett into the Chappaquiddick. Bennett coordinated the release of Dita Baird's statement from Denver after contacting Baird's 10 attorneys at the suggestion of a Howard Hughes executive, and Bennett suggested that Greenspan's safe contained information of interest to Hughes. Now, you see, the separation of Hughes and ITT doesn't exist. My story of Howard Hughes being buried and the CIA taking over the Hughes empire after Hughes was buried in 1971 is still the big story, like my Watergate scoop, and should be thoroughly pushed to public officials because Mullen Associates represented the interests of ITT, and they represent the interests of Howard Hughes. But when they want to conduct Dita Baird regarding an ITT memo, it was the suggestion of the Hughes executives and the intermingling of the Howard Hughes interest in Chappaquiddick through Mr. Bennett, Hughes and ITT and CIA can, for all practical purposes, be lumped as one. You remember when the ITT wanted to overthrow Allende and pour money into Chile, they used the ITT. Here's some more of this memo, this report from Mr. Colby. This is called the Baker Report on the CIA, which was brought in after the Senate Select Committee closed shop so that you don't have printed copies of this, and as I say, they should. It said that Mr. Hunt was given a price estimate for bugging Clifford Irving for Howard Hughes. Bennett coordinated the employment of political spy Tom Gregory. Mr. Bennett received a scrambler from Hughes personnel for use on the Mullen telephones. You see, they had a full CIA operation and scrambler going in the White House, Hunt and Liddy calling down to Miami to Bernard Barker where they're planning violence, and they also, for the 1972 campaign, and Bennett had their own scrambler provided by the Hughes Empire and in the office of Mullen Associates. Bennett received a scrambler from Hughes personnel for use on the Mullen telephones. Bennett and G. Gordon Liddy set up dummy committees as a conduit for the Hughes campaign contributions. Here you see in the report of Colby that these dummy fronts, dummy committees, were conduits for Hughes campaign contributions. And don't forget, let me insert, that $10 million was set aside using Hunt and Liddy and the police in Los Angeles and San Diego. And the convention was moved to Miami after the ITT scandal. And I allege that $10 million dummy fronts would be used to provide violence and provocateurs down in Miami that had nothing to do with the Republican Party. So here we have the Hughes money, a conduit for Hughes campaign contributions. And Bennett served as a point of contact between Hunt and Liddy during the 2 weeks following the Watergate break-in. These two men were sought by the police. The FBI were looking for them. And Bennett Associates, again, was a conduit to Hunt and Liddy. Furthermore, Robert Oliver, Mullen's Washington lobbyist for the Hughes Tool Company, the Howard Hughes Tool Company, is the father of R. Spencer Oliver, Jr., whose telephone was tapped at the Democratic National Committee. Bennett met with the Olivers after the break-in to discuss the bugging. The true nature of Bennett's relationship to the CIA was not known to us until late November 1973, when at Senator Baker's request, the CIA produced another volume of CIA documents. Now, this is William Colby of the CIA saying that none of this was available to give to the senators until November 73, but almost all of it was written up in The Realist in July 1972, a year and a half earlier. Now, Larry O'Brien, who was chairman of the National Democratic Committee, the quarters that were allegedly robbed but actually weren't at the Watergate Hotel, I have written and given my opinion about that entry. I think they were putting conversation agents on the telephone that would talk about violence or possibly killing Richard Nixon, planning violence for the Republican National Convention, rather. And then, if the violence came down, they would produce these telephone conversations, which allegedly would be put there for protective purposes because they got wind of riots and blame radicals and leftists and anti-war people for the violence that would have taken place if Watergate hadn't occurred. It's very interesting that Larry O'Brien's desk was interfered with, and he worked for Howard Hughes and Public Relations Office, paid by Howard Hughes, up to the time he worked for the Democratic National Committee, and I think even then, I have an article, he was still drawing. I'm not sure of that, but I think he was still drawing money from Howard Hughes. And now the second telephone that was bugged there was Robert Oliver, whose father works lobbyist for Hughes Tool Company, and the two Olivers then talked to Bennett, and Mr. Robert Bennett, after the break-in to discuss the bugging. And Mr. Colby says we couldn't know about this earlier, but they could. To continue the CIA report, on July the 10th, 1972, Robert Bennett reported detailed knowledge of the Watergate incident to a CIA case officer. Now, this was just 3 weeks after the arrest at the Watergate Hotel. The case officers reported this meeting was handwritten and carried to Richard Helms, the director of the CIA, before July the 14th, 3.5 weeks after the arrest. In this form, because of the sensitivity of the information, it revealed that Mr. Robert Bennett, who's representing Hughes and the ITT, had established a backdoor entry into E.B. Williams, the attorney for the Democratic National Committee, in order to kill off any revelations they would have of the CIA's relationship with Mullen and company in the course of the Democratic National Committee lawsuit. He agreed to check with the CIA, Mr. Bennett did. This is the attorney who just won the case for John Conley down in Texas. Mr. Bennett Williams agreed to confirm with the CIA, and he said, our staff has confirmed that Bennett did funnel information to Williams via an attorney, Hobart Taylor, and that this information was more extensive than the information Mr. Bennett had previously provided to any grand jury. The CIA has acknowledged paying one half of Mr. Bennett's attorney fees for his grand jury appearance. So, you people who paid your taxes just last week, I want you to know that some of your CIA taxes go to Mr. Bennett to appear to the grand jury, to not tell them what he knows about the CIA operations and hold back information from the grand jury. But then Mr. Richard Helms knew about it. Mr. Richard Helms, the CIA, of course, didn't speak up. There's no wonder that the Democratic Party could not expose the break-in at the Watergate Hotel for what it was. As a matter of fact, the first sentence in my article in The Realist in 1972 said, Democrats as well as Republicans contribute to murdering and concealing their crimes. And I challenged the Democratic Party to investigate the Watergate affair, which they couldn't possibly do. And I described it as being the most fantastic duel in political history if they would break the power structure of the hidden government. But you can see with Mr. Oliver and Larry O'Brien and Mr. Williams working with Mr. Bennett and the CIA team why the Democratic National Committee took a settlement of a few, $500,000, $500,000, I think, but didn't carry this lawsuit to where it should go and expose the illegal activities of the domestic CIA working in the United States. This report, Mr. Colby's report, goes on, although Robert Bennett was supplying information to the CIA about many aspects of the Watergate incident and was at that time serving as a liaison between Hunt and Liddy, there's no indication that these facts were disclosed to the FBI. The article, I'm continuing, the White House flap, in quotes, W.H. Flap, the report states that if the Mullen cover is terminated, because of this, as being a CIA front, the Watergate could not be used as an excuse. The CIA is convinced that Robert Mueller would have a need to withdraw agents in the Far East because of the exposures of this coming out. And then they referred to the WH flap, which caused consternation. This agency's explanation is clouded by conflicting evidence. This is what Mr. Colby wrote to Mr. Baker. The assistant deputy director of plans has testified that he's very familiar with the matter, but it has no unique effect on the Mueller cover. Here's continuing on page 12 of the memorandum to Senator Baker. A memorandum drafted by the chief of the Central Cover Staff, CIA, on March the 1st, noted that Mr. Bennett felt that he could handle the Sam Irvin Committee, if the agency could handle E. Howard Hunt. Bennett even stated he had a friend who had intervened with Irvin on the matter. The same memorandum suggests that Bennett took relish in implicating Colson and Hunt's activities. It is further noted that Mr. Bennett was feeding stories to Bob Woodward, who was suitably grateful that he was making no attribution to Bennett and that he was protecting Bennett, Mullen, and company. So, translated, it means after the Senate had their glorious opening and Sam Irvin gave his beautiful speech, which I reprinted in full in The Realist a year later, called an article called The Senate Select Committee as Part of the Cover-Up. Sam Irvin backed down, Senator Baker backed down, the whole team, as soon as they got to the really important thing of what Watergate was about, they all backed down. And I knew that summer, by the questions they asked and the witnesses they called, that they would never get back into the matter of the Watergate or Howard Hughes or the real murder of Mary Jo Compagini, the attempt on George Wallace's life, the violences of Congressman Mills and his two military aides, and many, many deaths would not be investigated, including the death of Dorothy Hunt. But this memorandum, I'll read it again, says that it was drafted by the chief of the Central Cover Staff, CIA, March 1st, 73. It notes that Bennett felt he could handle the Irvin Committee. Mr. Bennett, representing Howard Hughes and the ITT, he still works for Howard Hughes, could handle Sam Irvin, and a friend had intervened with Irvin on the matter. Now, that was March the 1st. They began around May, and in July, I wrote that their committee was a full cover-up. I could tell by the witnesses called and the questions asked. And then it goes on to say that information was fed to Bob Woodward. Well, why was information sent to these men who wrote All the President's Men, Woodward and Bernstein? One of these men was in Navy intelligence, and the whole thing about Watergate was to bring out one administration, bring in another, whether the man had to be murdered or discredited. A very, very far right wing has been involved in moving power farther right than ever. And Mr. Deep Throat, here it is in the Colby Report. We've heard rumors, but I want you to know this is how people like Marilyn Baker get articles to write a book exclusive. They get misinformation from the police department that has no bearing into the SLA as being a CIA operation. And that is why a book by Mr. Woodward and Bernstein, All the President's Men, the information is fed to them very selectively, and this is why they didn't go into any of the massive evidence of the planned murders and violence for the Republican National Convention or the other murders that took place, such as Beverly Kay, the secretary in the White House, with her 18-minute tape erased, and then she died in the White House. Another death that went very quietly and practically unreported was Mr. Pennington, but here's an article, part of the CIA report, called Pennington Matter. He says, the result of our investigation clearly shows that the CIA had in its possession as early as June 72 information that one of their paid operatives, Lee R. Pennington Jr., had entered James McCord residence shortly after the Watergate break-in and destroyed documents which might show a link between McCord and the CIA. This information was not made available to the committee until February 22, 1974. The evidence shows that August 1972, when the FBI inquired about a Mr. Pennington, the CIA agency gave them the wrong information and withheld the name of Lee R. Pennington Jr. when the FBI wanted at the time of the Watergate arrest. Mr. Pennington was retained at $250 per month until December of 1973. In January of this year, the Director of Security ordered that the Pennington materials be removed from the CIA Watergate files, and those files were about to be reviewed by the CIA Inspector General's office in connection with the CIA and congressional committees. Now, Mr. Pennington died very quietly. Seymour Hersh wrote an article in the New York Times about the death of Mr. Pennington, but he just simply said in the New York Times that Pennington was retired in 1970. And this is the kind of selective reporting that the New York Times and the Washington Post does. They cover these deaths and these murders, and they cover the CIA by saying he retired in 1970, when the CIA themselves said that Mr. Pennington was under salary until December of 73, almost until his death. He was under salary of the CIA, so that he was actively paid by the CIA when he went to James McCord's home and saw that evidence was destroyed immediately after the arrest at the Watergate Hotel. The CIA report says personnel security officer one was so concerned that the documentary evidence of the Pennington information would be destroyed by others in the CIA that he and a co-employee copied the memorandum and placed them in their personnel safes. Our investigation in this area produced the fact that, contrary to previous CIA assertions, the CIA conducted a vigorous in-house investigation of the Watergate affair starting almost immediately after the break-in. As one member of the security research staff stated, they were in a state of panic. I like this report because I remember when this article came out that I did in the press conference in August 1972 for the Associated Press, United Press, 3 weeks after the arrest at the Watergate. I was naming the Mullen Associates and Robert Bennett and the secret funds and asking about the used money and the Nazis and the links of ITT and CIA and secret funding of violence. And you can see what happened as soon as these men were arrested, not because of my article. My article didn't get out for 3 weeks. But reading again, it said, as one member of the security research staff stated, the CIA was in a state of panic. In November and December of 72, executive officer to director of security was specially assigned to then executive director, all these memos have no names, to conduct a very secretive investigation of several Watergate-related matters. And he was instructed to keep no copies of his findings and to make no records of what he found. He did his own typing. He utilized no secretaries. Mr. Pennington testified he did not go to McCord's home for the purpose of searching for or destroying CIA-related documents, but he did acknowledge witnessing the destruction of documents by Mrs. McCord and others. Mrs. McCord was never on the stand or asked who was present when Mr. Pennington saw this material destroyed, but Mr. Pennington died shortly thereafter. The report says it's clear from the testimony of others that the CIA did receive information from Pennington, and there was active participation by Operative Pennington in the destruction of these records. Goes on the report that shortly before Director Richard Helms left office, approximately 1 week after Senator Mansfield's letter asking for evidence and material related to the Watergate, Richard Helms himself ordered that the Watergate tapes be destroyed. It was during the week of January 22, 1973, while the CIA claims that the destruction was not unusual and was one of several periodic destructions, two facts remain clear. The only other destruction on record was in January 72, but there was a request from the Congress for specific Watergate-related material that Richard Helms of the Central Intelligence Agency ordered destroyed just prior to his becoming the ambassador to Iran in order to formulate policy of the CIA and prepare the CIA and Middle East agents for a holy war in to take place in the Middle East and a grab for oil. And Richard Helms went off to the Middle East as ambassador shortly before he did this. He destroyed information that was requested from him that was available, and it was permanently removed. The secrecy behind this thing involves more than entering the Democratic Hotel or the offices of Dr. Lewis Fielding. You might write to Senator Howard Baker and ask him for a copy of this report. If you want information about the UCLA conference, you write to me, and maybe next week I'll get back to completing the rest of this report on the air, because while there is a lot of important news events, I think we should share this CIA information with you, and I might continue this for you next week. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy from Carmel, California.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.
It's 6 o'clock.